everyone. Welcome all. Step right up. Step right up, ladies and gentlemen. Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 85. Coming at you right now. Howdy, everybody. Portal Gaming Podcast is a podcast brought to you by a store called The Portal, which is located in Manchester, Connecticut. And for more information, you can go to www.timemachineportal.com. Check us out on Facebook, The Portal, or on Twitter, at Portal Gaming 60. We are also a very proud member of the Dice Tower Network. We're the only podcast from a store that is on the Dice Tower Network, from a FLGS, emphasis on the F for friendly, excited to do that. This episode 85, we're going to be going just over a lot of plays that we've had lately, so we are entitling this one, Your Ship, I Want Her From You Fair and Square. Howdy, everybody. I am your host, The Brant, and with me...
Your co-host, Brian.
Woo!
So, yeah, back after a little bit of a
it wasn't too bad. A month ago or so.
Yeah.
We did this, so...
But there are a lot of games that have happened since.
So we decided there's not really a lot extra here. We're just going to go over a lot of games. But we should start with Tabletop Day, our last plug. People who've been listening all the way up through are probably like, oh my goodness. last week I double hit them because I released two episodes, both with plugs for Tabletop Day. But it's going to be really awesome. It's going to be exciting. It is Saturday. You tell us. I always tell them.
Saturday, April 28th, we're going to be open all day, midnight to midnight, so we're not going to be shutting the doors from, you know, that Friday night magic in through till, midnight Saturday. So come down, play some games, like, we're going to be there, I'll be there hopefully all day, you know, unless something...
Kathy.
Oh, she'll be around for... Yeah, nice. That'll be good.
We announced it on the last episode.
Oh, yeah. I guess I didn't listen to that episode.
No, I literally posted it hours ago.
Phew. I'm in the clear. I didn't listen to the one.
You're good.
All right. No, so yeah, we're going to be open that whole time, playing games. There's always a ton of people just coming down to just be part of the community. So I think, you know, just stop by, say hi, and play some games with us if you can.
Yeah, definitely. And... So, Eric Summers coming. He said sometime in the morning he'd be out with his family. Not really an event-oriented thing with him coming. Just lives nearby, going to come play games. Rob Davio's coming kind of like mid-afternoon, dinner time, stopping by. Same kind of thing, just coming to hang out, try to get both of them on the podcast quickly, recapping some of their time and what they're up to and whatnot. Obviously, Rob's very busy with Fireball Island and Restoration and all that. Eric's busy with all the Dice Tower stuff and getting ready for the convention season, so we definitely appreciate their time. Anthony and Francis, unfortunately, will not be able to make it from Ant Lab Games. They totally want to, so they're going to find like a separate weekend to come out, so that'll be awesome. So, unfortunately, it didn't work for them, but be good to see them soon. So,
yeah. You don't have to be there for the whole 24 hours. Right. I know some people like the challenge. I personally enjoy doing that, but I also kind of cheat a little bit and sleep like a little more on Friday. I know some people are coming in like they had work all day Friday and then they're just going right through.
Right.
And, you know, you can definitely tell toward the end, but there's a good crowd and it's cool to see like the people that do stick around for the whole time.
And we have the auction.
Yeah.
So that's important. I know that if you're interested in participating in the game auction, like I think stuff has to be up by 9 a.m. I would say even better, like come a day or two before.
Yeah, call up, you know, John's the one that's really, you know, taking charge on that. So, you know, call up, see what, you know, what he's got. It's better to try to get as much ahead of time as you can. But obviously, like, you know, like we're just kind of basing it off of previous auctions that we've held. So, you know, just come down and, you know, bring some stuff that you want to get rid of or bring some cash to kind of to pick something else up.
Yeah.
But the nice thing is, too, we run it through the register so we can still, it's not just like a cash auction. You can, you know, pay with a card or something like that. And it's, you know, John does a great job with it. So,
hey, I picked up a big game I wanted. I got Armada on the super cheap. I played it. Brian's laughing because he's like, have you played? I totally have. And it's fun.
You picked it up
once.
You bought it in the auction, or
I paid for it.
Yeah,
it's been paid for. That took a little while for me to pay Gary back.
Yeah, that's more why I was
not out of brand is cheap and doesn't want to pay people back, just out of literally remembering to have money on me to pay somebody back.
Oh yeah, I have no problem with Armada. I've looked at it myself, but I would never get it to the table.
Yeah, no, it is a little bit tricky, but it's awesome, and every day I want to buy that Imperial Star Destroyer just to have it. So, but then I have to buy the balancing force on the other side to be able to actually bring it to the table. So, Brian, my family is in Buffalo right now. And they're hanging out, and they're at Niagara Falls and all that. And unfortunately, I don't have vacation this week and cannot take vacation this week, so I am not with them. But as I've said to you many times now, it's sad because Gathering of Friends is happening right now, and that would have been awesome had I gone up there. Probably could have popped over there and hung out and seen a bunch of people. So I've seen some pictures and things. And that one's always kind of exciting. It's kind of usually, to me, where you get the first glimpse. Like, I remember hearing about Codenames from there. I remember hearing about 504 from there. Like, various other games that you kind of get the first, like, people are like, oh, this game is amazing. Like, we played this there, you know?
But now you have to, like, say so. Like, you haven't seen anything that jumps out to you like that?
No.
So, okay.
Right. Well, it's weird. Even Gamma was the same way this year. I didn't see anything at Gamma that was, like, you know, that was, like, oh, I can't wait for that. That's going to be amazing.
Right.
A lot of things were kind of known, and you finally got to see them. The game I'm really excited for is Steamrollers. Have you heard of that?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't really looked too much into it. I've heard, you know, I think it was talked about a bit on the last Dice Tower podcast. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I guess I haven't really
it's like too far. I don't know if it's a heavy roll and write, but at least for roll and writes, it's a and so it's like 18XX. Or I think even Age of Steam, it's very much like that, with a roll and write. But it's a full-size game. It's not just like a little pad. So I'm pretty stoked for that one. That's the one that I'm like, ooh, I can't wait to do that. And Paper Tales is the other one.
Yeah, so really Stronghold is really...
yeah, I know, right? I didn't realize that, but there's that piece. So
we're no, that's really about... good, though. That's exciting for them.
Yeah. Right?
So
we're supposed to talk about games we've played lately. So I think we're good for announcements. Tabletop Day. We'll leave everybody alone on that, but definitely come out. And I think we should jump in. So
sure.
We got to go way back. So, and we got a lot of games, so we'll see what we get through. We'll probably hand wave through some replays and whatnot. But, yeah, it's been a while since we've talked. So we're going way back. We played Fog of War. So this is Stronghold Games and Jeff Engelstein, and I really had been eyeing this and wanting to play it and got it, and then it's a two-player experience, and actually even looking over this list, we've had a lot more two-player or even just game nights in the last month than we had for three or 4 months there. So that was good, and I said to you, I said, I need you to play this game with me. Like, I
right.
need another
You're
person.
You're going to play this even though you don't think you want to.
Right. And it's there's no doubt it's a war game in terms of, like, you're fighting over Europe, right, and
right.
North Africa, but it's definitely clever. The mechanisms are definitely clever. So there's a wheel, like an operations wheel, Alpha, Beta, Charlie, Delta, whatever they are. I don't know, what's the second one? Bravo. And so you set up a mission, so you have you got Sweden, and you've got the Mediterranean Sea East, and you've got, you know, Germany, whatever, and you pick a region you want to attack, and then you play cards that you drew from, like, your hand. So you've got tanks of various values, and infantry of various values, and planes, which can be used either at sea or on land, and you've got ships, and you place them, you even have, like, are they called dummies? I can't remember what they were. Zeros? They were blanks. And you could put those in, and so you set up this mission, and then it has to wait. It has to, like, mature or whatever before the plan can go off, so you have to wait two rounds, and then you can attack that region. And the combat's very straightforward. It's deterministic, but things are blind. You don't know what's there, and people can be adding. And there's various conditions. So I was Germany trying to hold out and gain a certain amount of resources. You are trying to take the sections of Germany. And then there's, like, a victory point system, I think, if we get to the end, for all that. We did not, because we got to a certain year, so each year you add more cards to your deck, for the most part, or more things that are available, and you can purchase cards, and I feel like you kind of caught me in a noob trap. You were also a noob,
right.
So I want to be careful, but it was like, you saw it coming and I didn't see it where Russia right. opens up.
And then just kind of swung in there and took...
right. You went first.
Right.
And just attack, 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 attack all these regions right in a row. And if you take over, like, the two German regions, you just win. And I had pulled my defense just thinking, I don't need to defend that anymore. I've pushed out from there.
yeah. No, I mean, it was definitely one of those ones, though. It started off and it was very lopsided at the beginning. Or it felt that way. You know, kind of yeah. overwhelming. You know, Germany's really on this offensive. They've got all this stuff that's, you know, they're very powerful to start. And then if, you know, if everyone, like, you know, if the other side can kind of hold them off and just wait it out, and, like, it eventually turns the corner and feels like it balances out a lot. And it got to the point in ours, just because it opened up that way, that, you know, I could swing in there and win that way. Like, it felt like the way Germany could win. At first, it felt very daunting to me. Like, I did not think that I had much of a shot. Mm-hmm. And then, like, the alternatives, the way that... Like, if it had gone all the way to the end of the game, right? I think it was pretty clear that, like I would have had to have done a lot to have prevented yeah. Germany from yeah. winning if it got all the way to the end.
Right.
So... You know, it definitely felt like it had turned that corner and it was becoming a little more, you know, one-sided on my end. But either way, I mean, I definitely found myself enjoying the feel once it was like, once you saw that the game kind of balanced itself that way.
Right.
You know.
It was a little scary, like, it's like 5 years, and the first year you start with a deck of like 25 cards. Mm-hmm. And you've got to go through that deck to end a round, so distributing those cards and asking questions. So that whole first year took us an hour, and I was like, are we in for a 5-hour war game? But then, you know, once we got to the later round, they were 15 minutes. We had 10 cards and 12 right. cards and knew the rules and were much more limited in what we could do and what we wanted to do with, you know, things already underway. It was much faster. So I think we ended up playing it, the whole thing, in like 2 hours, because I think you beat me in that like second to last year, maybe, right at the start.
It was pretty far into it, yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't actually really mind losing that way. Like, it felt dumb. Like, mm-hmm. but it was kind of like, okay, I will protect against that every time. Like, I'll think right. that way in the future. So it was just one of those, like, didn't even think of that, you know? Which was yeah. interesting.
But I mean, it was also something where you would have had to have sacrificed elsewhere to, like... to shore that up. So, I mean, there's, like, you know, maybe it would have been easier on another front, you know, if it had shifted a different way, you know. But it was still, like, it was enjoyable. I don't know how often, you know, I'll end up playing it, but...
Yeah, it's interesting because I'm thinking not even just playing with you, but other people, and I feel like the game is very clever, mm-hmm. and it's almost one of those games that's, like, too clever for its own good. Like, I don't know how to sell the game. I don't, like, it's not really a war game, even though it is. So I don't really pull it out with, like, a war gamer, which is really just Jeff. He's the other one who's going to enjoy that the most, you know? So it's not like, oh, we're just going to head-to-head clash in this. Like, it's not really that. You're thinking. But it's right. not really, like, Euro-y. It's not the kind of clash that Kathy's going to want to do. So I don't right. have that there, you know? So it's like, and then... We were fine, like, learning the system, but somebody that just felt like you had a leg up because you played once, they're trying to figure out the system, and you've already got it figured out. It's like they need a game under their belt. So it's that classic, like, after both people have played 3 games, it's probably, like, really solid.
Right.
Because everybody knows, oh, these are all the cards, these are the options, these are the things to watch for, here we go. But now you're basically making a 4-game commitment to get to that game. And that doesn't mean the other three were bad. You can totally play the other 3 games. They're just going to have these weird, like, oh, they were way too powerful, or, oh, there was this, you know, sneak attack win that I just didn't see coming, or I didn't understand the mechanism, so I was playing the wrong cards in places.
Though I think as it went along, we were figuring out how you could work within the system, you know, and be clever about, you know, playing cards and having different things on the board, or, you know, like, it felt like... It did turn the corner, too, even within our play. You know, after that first round, maybe it's just something where you introduce it and you have the new person kind of have a stronger, like a stronger start or something. Yeah, I don't know. I guess yeah, I don't know what the balance is. I'd be interested to see like what the win ratio would be for it. You know, mm-hmm. if they have any of that data on like BGG or anything like that, it would be neat to see. And then you can kind of play it up to whoever's starting and get them familiar with the system with like the easier one to play and go from there.
Right.
But I don't know. I mean, yeah, it was rewarding and I'm glad that you forced me to play it.
Yeah. No, I agree. I was happy that we got to play it again. Don't know when. The other thing is it's pretty much ugly. Like, it's got all these colors, which are great because they code everything, and then it almost looks like Monopoly on the outside. Like, you've mm-hmm. got all these colored, numbered properties that represent where you put your cards. So you don't put your cards, like, in Germany. You put your cards on the German space on the outside. So, again, it looks like Monopoly with all these colored spaces along the outside. And there's like, tints. So there's, like, an almost neonish orange next to, like, a neonish pink. Mm-hmm. And then there's like a teal blue, like, and they're all there. It totally works. It completely, you know, like, it's good graphic design in terms of can I distinguish everything? Yes. But it is, you know, plain. So again, it's not one of those games you're going to open it and be like, oh, would you be interested in this, right? And it's, I don't know, would I? So there's that element. Not always the selling point. Right. For sure, but there's that. Cool, what do you want to talk about next?
Yeah, I mean, I've got a little gap in there. It just was some of those familiar games that that we've gone back to. You know, Roll for the Galaxy and Pulsar 2849. I don't know, had you talked about that one on here?
The one we played Pulsar? Recently? I've talked about Pulsar, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. No, I mean, I'm glad like those ones are just steady ones now that I've gotten to the table. We played Pulsar as a four-player game. I've played it a bunch, but I'd only played it two-player prior. Mm-hmm. And I really found myself enjoying, like, I think I liked the two-player at the moment more than I did the larger player count for Pulsar. But, again, I just played it the one time with a larger player count, and I've played it so often with two players that it felt more, like, it changed the game in the sense that, like, the four-player game, the spatial stuff, like the map gets a little more congested, there's a little more competition over certain things, and the way you draft dice changes pretty drastically from a two-player game. Mm-hmm. It's more limiting, and you know, you're probably not going to get both things that you want when you're doing it with a larger player count. So I really did like the two-player aspect of, you know, have two selections, but you kind of manipulate where those happen within a round. And I think that gave a lot of back and forth, and it created a cool puzzle in itself. So again, I guess I'd be glad to try it again, you know, even three or four players, but I've really liked it as a two player game and I pretty much almost exclusively played it at two player. So
yeah, it's a little bit of the Grand Austria Hotel feel. Like, I feel like that's kind of the poster child game now for this, like it's the same game at two and four, it's just longer with four. Like, that's true of so many games.
Right.
But it's really true of these types of games. Like, just waiting and the dice become more spread out and more random because I don't have as much control over them. Mm-hmm. And those kind of things. What's nice about Pulsar that it does different from, like, I said, some of the Days of Wonders two players, like Five Tribes and Yamatai, where they like double up. So instead of getting one action in a turn, you get two. In Pulsar, you still get two dice with two players, mm-hmm. and you get two dice with four players. So it's the same game either way. You don't have that change. So I remember, like, it might be both Five Tribes and Yamatai, where you can go like third and fourth in a round, and then first and second in the next round, and have four turns in a row, and just decimate an area of points and items, and just leave the other player like, okay, take your four turns, and then I'll bother to think about what's going on. And that's not necessarily bad. It's really fun to do that, but it definitely like changes the flow of how the game feels. Five Tribes even more so.
Yeah.
In terms of that. But yeah, but what was awesome in this game was like we finished like 179, 179, 178. There was another player who was then behind from there. But like that's an awesome finish.
Right.
For a game. And we knocked it out in less than 2 hours.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying it. So I'm not knocking it, I guess. It's not a bad game. I didn't think it was a bad game at four players. But if I were to bring it back out, I would probably prefer the two-player experience and just try to get that over. So like that goes really quickly. You can just blast that out. And I think part of the game is just cool to try to figure out. I mean, there's so many different things that can change from game to game, right? So you could get different player boards. There are different technologies. Different end game goals.
And they're significant enough to change the game.
Right. So it's a neat puzzle to try to figure out how to best do that. And I guess a lot of times, like when you're trying to puzzle out something like that, when there are limits on what you can take, like a four-player game kind of makes that a little more stressful in a lot of games.
Sure.
But I think like the two player, it's still like rewarding and it just happens. It goes by so quickly that, you know, it, even if you have kind of a dud of a game, like you're going to get through it and just, you know, you could play again and change it up, you know, pretty drastically.
Yeah.
So.
Cool.
Yeah.
We played some heavier stuff. Here on a game day, on a Saturday, we played Sidereal Confluence, Trading and Negotiation in the Elysian Quadrant. So, this game got a lot of buzz, like, very, very end of 2017 and into now. Mm-hmm. Enough so to make me be like, do we have a copy of this somewhere? And let's dig it out, and let's play it. And it is unique. There is no doubt about it. So, I'm going to call this Cosmic Encounter the Euro game. There's all sorts of things wrong with that, I understand. But that's basically the idea to me. Is you take that Cosmic Encounter, like, here's all these crazy races, and just all these cards are flying, and chaos is happening, and people are making deals, and you're trying to win the game doing that. There's probably a little bit more backstabbery in that, hence why I'm calling this more of a Euro game. But this has that same thing. You've got asymmetrical races, and then you've just got cubes. Colors, sizes, cylinders. Just this is, you know, trading in the Mediterranean in the Elysian Quadrant. You know? Like, it is just that to the extreme. Because literally, you have tech powers that are like, trade in this cube and this cylinder and get three of these little cubes and a victory point. And you're trying to do that. Or flip your technologies over to increase their effectiveness or whatever. So basically the game is go. And you start negotiating. Right. And it's until everybody but one person doesn't want... Sorry, trading. Until everybody doesn't want to trade. Except one person, because then it doesn't matter because nobody wants to trade with them. So there's no even timer. It's not even like a 5-minute timer. It's just, I happy?
Begin and...
And then everything's basically compulsory. You trade in resources to generate more resources and victory points, and then there's a bidding phase. So there's a bidding on like new planets that you want to get and new technologies you want to get, and then move to the next round and start, you know, trading again. So I guess there's a little bit of choice in those other rounds for the bidding and all that. But yeah, it is just a big mess of, you know, try to figure it out, and these races are so crazy. I remember mine was like, I have to trade techs to other people so that they can use them because I can't use them. But finding the value of that was so hard. They do a decent job at least of being like, okay, three little cubes equal one big cube, and two big cubes are a cylinder or something like that. So they try to give you a basic value,
right?
But it doesn't really matter. Like, at the end of the day, if you need two little cubes, you just got to trade a big cube for two little cubes because the resources are limited enough that you can't guarantee that somebody has what you want.
Right. I mean, it creates this cool like supply and demand within the system, like the game that you're playing. And then it also has, like, it forces you to evaluate how other players are doing, like, you know, in relation to you. So, you know, I think the first play, that, like, I guess this is going to be that same sort of thing. First play, you know, like, we had one or two of us that were just, like, you know, head and shoulders above in points, like everyone else. But, you know, that's just going to be because there's, like, people are just kind of trying to figure out the system and, you know, trading stuff to just, you know, based on whatever restrictions there are that it kind of gives you. And I think after you get that system down, or you can actually see, you know, how other people are doing points wise or within the game, you can kind of say, yeah, no, I need a little more from you because you're doing really well.
Right, right. That's true.
And I think that part's, right, that's very intriguing.
Self-balance the game.
Yeah. Without having, like, you know, but again, that can get, you know, the wrench can be thrown in that if someone else just trades the thing that they're looking for, you know? So you really have to have, like, a group of people that are, you know, on that level that can really play that, or you have to just go into it knowing it's going to be this experience more than I'm playing to win this time.
Right.
But
that was the other key element, actually, though, that's important, that's unique in this game, which is once somebody creates a technology,
mm-hmm.
they score points for having created it, but everybody unlocks that technology. So everybody has the same tech deck, and now it's available to everybody. So this, your tableau grows exponentially. Like, you've got your cards that you start with, and then a couple people make techs, and then everybody makes a tech, and then more people make techs, plus you unlock a tech from something else. So you end up with six of us. We consumed my entire, like, giant table.
Right.
You know, it was significant. And so then you're now, you know, you're, like, spreadsheeting. You're like, okay, well, this one's here, and I'm going to organize and move these around and move these cubes around, start putting them on the thing so I know where they go. But you hit the nail on the head with the word intriguing. I mean, there's no doubt I will play this game again. It was great, and I was terrible. Like, you had 45 points, and I had, like, 16 or something.
Yeah, so.
But it didn't matter. It was totally the experience of the game.
Yeah.
I mean, the outcome is how well did I do it all that, I suppose. But I never felt like, oh, this is terrible. I can't do everything. Everybody has tons more points. I honestly didn't know I was doing that bad. Yeah. I didn't realize that people were making all these techs and pulling in 3, 4, 5 points, and that I had only created 2 late in the game and gotten, like, 3, you know, whatever.
For right.
I still was going for the same goal, you know. There was a little bit of, like, I did terrible, but, you know, for the most part, I was fine, so. Yeah, that's just a 2-thumbs-up game from me. I can't wait to get that out. I hope maybe Tabletop Day and that overnight would be a good spot.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
We got a lot of plans.
What's the other one, the, like, Wall Street?
On Wall Street?
Yeah, I think people were playing that last time on a 24-hour thing.
Craziness.
And it felt like it was a really cool, you know, a similar sort of, like, just experiences, like, you know, have stuff kind of going back and forth and whatnot. But, yeah, no, I think this game is definitely not for everyone, right? So, I mean, you have to really...
Oh, no, there's people that would just be overwhelmed. Yeah, like,
and even, like, I guess part of the reason why I hadn't pushed to get it out to the table or anything like that, like, I was a little worried that I wasn't going to like it myself. So it was kind of this, like, oh, let's see, this sounds really cool, but who knows, maybe I'll just hate this. And, you know, I was very worried about it going in. But it was definitely rewarding. I'd play it again in a heartbeat.
Yeah, it's like, I feel like even if people are like, oh, I don't like negotiation, like, you just trade, like, just see what happens, you know? But there's definitely people who are hesitant on that front. Are we doing John Company?
Yeah, we could.
All right.
I mean, do we count that as a play?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Why did that... Oh, because I messed up rules?
Yeah.
Oh. Whatever. They weren't enough to, like, destroy... Yeah, they probably did. Do you want to explain just slightly John Company? Or you want me to do it?
Yeah, I don't have it fresh in my mind.
All right. So John Company is... you're all collectively owners, runner, people who run the... East India Trading Company. Probably made famous, like, Pirates of the Caribbean, and also just history. And you're all part owners and stockholders in this. But what's intriguing here is you're basically at this point the company is good and is running and is profitable, and you're trying to now pull as much profit as you can for yourself. And if the company tanks, so be it. You know, to hell with the company if I can get money. And so you're trying to get out of the business, which we often said fired, but you're really retiring with your money. So it's,
right.
You know, it's take the money and run. And you want to get out and spend your money to get like a good bonus where you get an ability so you can still kind of have your hand in the cookie jar and score points for the end of the game. So this is a Cole Worley game from Sierra Madre. Sierra Madre is always these, like, wrap your head around the game is the first thing. So I am not going to go through mechanisms here. But essentially, everybody gets a single action. Then the company runs a series of actions where everybody has people who may be in charge of various parts of the company. So I'm in charge of shipping. I'm in charge of military control of regions. I'm in control of producing goods, like all these different things. And so people run those, which are somewhat compulsory and somewhat decision-oriented. It depends on how many things you could do. And then you can, like, trade with these other regions of India, or you can try to take them over and demand tribute and collect taxes. And so the whole time, like, if you're in charge of a region and it gets taxed, you can either give that money to the company or pocket it. And so you're trying to weigh out, because if you take the money from the company, which I guess is very 18XX, they do this same kind of idea. If I take the money myself, right, then I have it to spend on other things, but if I put it in the company, so the company may go under. Once that happens, then you can kind of pay out shares to people, so people can get a portion of the money that was earned by trading. And then you kind of see where the round goes, and you play a certain number of rounds with all these events coming out. We kind of played the shortened, like, 5 or 6 round game, and I think a full game is like 10 or 12 rounds or something like that. But this is, what we played was a full game. It's just the full suggested, like, you know, without all the other pieces. It was really interesting, and what worked, I felt like, was we weren't, as a group, getting it in the beginning, but as we were playing, we were getting it more and more. And we were fixing the rules, which I know is a huge part, so I was missing elements like, oh, that tax money comes in and whatnot, but people were starting to see, like, that element of, oh, if I don't give this money to the company, that's going to hurt me because I can't get more money in the future from it. Or, oh, I shouldn't be giving that money. I should be pocketing that so I have it to do what I want to do with it when my people retire.
Well, I feel like so many games are coming out, and it's like you'll take your turn. Like, I'm just talking in general. You'll take your turn in a lot of games, and you'll feel like, oh, I know what I just did.
Yeah.
Whereas all the Sierra Madre games that I've played, you take your turn, and you just kind of, like, sit there, and you're wondering what happened, but you're, like, all your turns are just chipping away at that, like, very intricate, complicated, like, system that's been put together. Mm-hmm. So you don't see the, like, this immediate, like, swing in your favor. You see, like, eventually you see what your work has led up to, but you don't see, like, what's going on in the midst of it.
Right.
Or at least that's how I feel for a lot of them. Yeah. But I mean, it's definitely one of those ones where you, once you get into the flow and you kind of see where you've gone, you can make decisions based on how you need to, like, get to the end game, or, you know, do what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, and so much of these, I think what also makes the Sierra Madre games tough, and this one's very much that boat, is they're very simulation oriented. So there is no guarantee that your good choices will work out. So whether it be some die rolls in this game, which are plentiful but necessary, whether it be other things that happen, other choices people make, that whatever, there's just so many things that you can't control, so things are just going to happen. So there isn't necessarily a wrong decision. Should I do this or not? Well, it depends, right? It's kind of always the idea. And so I think though this game has that potential for everybody kind of wrapping their head around that, or even me as the teacher knowing the rules a little bit better, or whoever it is, like presenting the game that way. Like, is this for you to take chances, to try to get that money and really be hooping and hollering and working together? Because it has those, what were those? They were like bribes or prizes or something that you could give to people? Promises. So I'm going to give you a promise cube to do this for me. And now I'm 2 coins in debt to you. That's a key part of the game. Like, if you don't want to do it through discussion, then I'll just do this to get you to do.
Right.
I think it really needs that element. So again, no way this is going to be for everybody. This is going to be that very select crowd that's enjoying that. But again, I'd like to try it again, know those rules a little bit better, and try to get people to know that. But you also need that group that's ready for that. Like, that's right. That's what they want to take on. They want these.
Yeah. How many people did we play with? Was it 6?
I think we played with 6. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's what max is at. So.
Okay. Yeah. No, it was good to sit down and, you know, go through it all.
Yeah.
And, you know, hopefully at some point we'll play it with what you're talking about, with that group that's looking
right.
for it.
Right.
So.
I'm going to mention one other quick, because we played a half a game of Feudum.
Yeah.
You have it in there?
No.
Okay. So all I'm going to say for Feudum was we were excited to get this out, break this out, lots of rules. I did a crash course, because I think we started at midnight, 11:30.
Yeah, right around there.
And so I tried to do, like, if you watch the heavy cardboard run through, it's like an hour plus teach. So I tried to do the 20-minute teach and be like, here's the rules, and then the guilds do all these things, and I feel like I played enough to have a good grasp on the game. I wouldn't want to review the game and say, yes, it's great, no, it's terrible. That element is a little bit tougher. But there's a lot. There's a lot in that game. There's a lot of things. And I definitely get that sense of, like, there had to be some way to streamline some of those things. And at the end of the day, it felt like the guild actions were so important. Like, mm-hmm. and the flow, like, once you get in charge of a guild in this game... I know I'm not explaining a lot for listeners of what's happening, but it was interesting, and I want to try it again. I definitely need to play a full play, but it felt like a bloated Euro to me. Aggro felt this way to me, too. Like, I knew what I was doing in Aggro, and it was exciting at times to get there, but it was so long, like that chipping away to, like, okay, I'm finally going to be able to put a piece up here. And I think I just appreciate those ones where it's like, I'm going to do this, and the next action do this, and now, boom, this happens, you know? So, I just figured I'd mention Feudum as half a play, so. What do you got on your list?
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess this was not this past month, but the previous one. There was the library event, Geek Fever Games came out and showcased some stuff. I know the big one that a lot of people were playing was Dead Man's Doubloons.
Yeah.
So I didn't get a chance to try that one out, of course. Otherwise, you know, I'd give some information on that. But I got to play, like, on the sides, kind of help teach some stuff as I learned it. You know, I played Awesome Bots and Avoid the Void a few times and ended up, you know, teaching them and getting stuff to the table with that. And I definitely, like, those, they were really quick. I know... I was looking to pick up Avoid the Void. Like, it's just, like, a very quick take that sort of, you know, space card game. You know, like, you're just doing stuff that's... You're trying to be the last one, you know, to avoid. Like, you're just trying to avoid the void.
Gotcha.
You're trying to be the last one standing. Everyone else, it's, like, very, very take that. You're playing cards that are, like, affect other people. You're manipulating, like, all these tiles that are out, like, in this outer space board, and your ships are all, like, around there. You're going to basically, you know, try to keep, like, you have to, like, move every turn, and you also have to have cards in your hand every turn, and the spaces are tied into, like, you'll draw X number of cards where X is a number on each tile. So your spaceship might be on, like, a 3 tile, so you're drawing 3 cards, mm-hmm. and then you have to play, I think it was, like, half of your cards... in your hand or something like that. I might be wrong on that, but you had to play a certain number of cards from your hand, and then, you know, you had to be able to move after that. So all these tiles also had arrows on them, so, like, you know, there might be one where you're drawing 3 cards, but you can't move, like, on that tile. You have to, like, play a card to be able to, like, jump your ship over somewhere else, so then you can move.
Huh.
So you just have to kind of, you can't stagnate, and you have to, like, figure out how to keep those cards flowing. But it played really quickly, and, you know, I had fun. Like, it wasn't the best game ever or anything, but, like, it was enjoyable and a really great filler for, like, a high player count too.
Mm.
So
cool.
Yeah, that was Avoid the Void and Geek Fever Games. It was great having them out for the event. I know Jen, you know, did a lot of work with that, just getting them there. And, you know, it was cool to see some local-ish designers coming out, yeah, playing some games and teaching some stuff there.
Absolutely, yeah. Cool. I'm moving up the list here. Up the list. I'm looking at the Steve Finn games, which I talked about already there.
Yeah, you see, so you went over that, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah,
that
and he was on the podcast here for a little bit too. So we went through Little Flower Shop, Sunset Over Water, Herbaceous, Cosmic Run, Rapid Fire, all those. My favorite is still Biblios.
Yeah, no, I really like Cosmic Run, Rapid Fire. I picked that up.
Oh, nice. Yeah, so. that one was fun too. So, yeah, we went through those, so I'm just looking through here. Is Gaia Project our next?
That one? We played together?
Yeah, I have Near and Far in here.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I've talked Near and Far, so why don't you give us your initial impressions where you were at with that?
Yeah, no, I mean, because we had played Above and Below, like, a while ago, mm-hmm, right? And I know, like, the Red Raven games, they're really well done, you know, production and all that sort of stuff. I think I always find myself wanting more from those games, you know, not in a bad way necessarily, but it just always feels like I'm so enthralled with, like, whatever's going on, like, I want more of something good, you know. And Near and Far seem to hit on that. I guess that's kind of what a lot of people have said, like reviewers and whatnot, where it's like, this is the game to go to for that story mixed with, like, a cool, yeah, just like the game plus the story.
Yeah,
it works so well together.
So good.
And I'm glad I got to try it out. I know it wasn't one that I was gonna be like saying, hey, I'm gonna play this one. So I think it was one that you needed to put on the table. But you know, I wasn't like avoiding it or anything like that.
No, yeah.
I know I'd been playing Charterstone a bit, and that was kind of taking over in that, like, in a similar category to me, where it was like a commitment for playing all these, like, scenarios or whatnot. So I would play Near and Far with my wife or, you know, whoever. Like, it just seems like it's a good system, and it left me wanting more, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
So.
No, and it's amazing because we, Jason Perez on every night is game night, and myself, we interviewed Ryan Lockett on one of their episodes.
Yeah.
And talked to him. But, I mean, he said, you know, you go places and it's that same thing. Those gamers, the non-gateway, whatever, like, they just love Near and Far. But for whatever reason, Above and Below has just massively outsold it. Like, which was really interesting to me because I just feel like Near and Far is just, like, the perfect evolution of Above and Below. Like, this is what I'm looking for, because Above and Below really didn't have a lot of gamification. I guess that's the wrong word, but, like, really heavy gamer. It was like, oh, I can collect these resources and I can try to figure out how to get people, but it was very light and the story was really interesting. That was an element that we didn't see a lot implemented right into kind of a Euro or whatever.
Yeah.
But I feel like Near and Far just nails it because it's got the worker placement, it's got the action selection or resource spending to go out on the map, and then you can just immediately come back, so it keeps that flow. I mean, the game just flows so well, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Above and Below, really, that came out at a great time, too, though, right? Yeah. It was kind of like, that was before all the other things had really been hitting, like the huge games consistently, like a Gloomhaven or a Seventh Continent, like stuff like that, where it's like, I feel like a lot of those are competing with Near and Far for time and commitment. You know, even like what I was saying, like Charterstone was one that was, you know, I was playing that. Mm-hmm. I don't have time to branch off into something else where I'm going to commit to playing multiple play sessions to get like the game experience out of it.
Near and Far is pretty quick too.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's also, you know, it's just in the, I feel like it's very crowded. I guess that's with all games, though, right?
Right.
But
yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Sometimes you just have to resolve that there's some you might not play, and then there's some that you got to play multiple times or at the right count, right? Like Pulsar, you're saying, two players, my bread and butter, so that's where I, you know, mostly want to play that game, you know? If we have four and there's another option, I might go for that instead.
And right. And those are things that I'd love for people to prove me wrong, too. You know, like, sure, I know a while ago I had mentioned, like, Great Western Trail, even, where it was like, you know, hey, I just want to play this more than two. And then, you know, I played it at two player and it was really fun. You know, like, so it's just one of those things where that's just that, like, that state of mind at the moment. And then you're hoping that it changes for the better, which, you know, some do, some don't.
You totally just reminded me that I want to play Great Western Trail with Kathy again. Like, I'm in that mode. They've been gone now. Like, this is day three or four, and they're coming home tomorrow. So I'm totally in the, like, excited.
Play with them.
For them to come home again. And I'm like, oh, man, that's just, that's a game that I know Kathy adores.
Mm-hmm.
That she probably doesn't remember that she does.
Right.
It's not something she's going to be like, oh, let's play that. She'll see it and know she wants to play it. But she probably remembers. So now I'm like, ooh, I got to put that somewhere. She'll see it. And, get that out again, because that is a great two-player game.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great game. It's
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Cool, cool. Yeah, well, I hear what you're saying even, too, like, with Gloomhaven, like, it's my favorite game, but I'm not trying to get anybody to play it, because it doesn't make sense.
Right.
The only thing I'll do, so, Dice Tower Tonight, Eric and Crystal did it because Tom's away. And they did Dice Tower Night, and they were talking Gloomhaven and Seventh Continent. And just the, we got to break out Gloomhaven and find a group and blah, 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 and all that. They were both mostly talking about soloing it. And I said, I just sent them a message saying, like, two-player consistent. Like, Eric, play with your son. Crystal, play with your husband or somebody nearby, like, whatever. And that's the best experience for that game. That's what that game was intended to be in my mind. The
right.
four-player group night, you gotta have, like, a D&D type group that's very committed, that's gonna be there.
Well, some group, like, some play groups are like that.
Right.
You know, and I'll see it at the store even, where it's, like, people come in and they're playing Gloomhaven week after week. I think, you know, I guess we're kind of in the extreme where it's just so much to try to consume.
Right.
You know, and you know, when it's looking at it that way, it's gonna be tough to to get into multiples of those. But, you know, Near and Far, I guess, is kind of what we had branched off from. But Near and Far is definitely worth playing. And, you know, I want to play more of that at some point, too. So I'll just have to steal that from you.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
What do we got next?
Yeah, I guess I'll be jumping around a little bit. You know, I taught Terraforming Mars to a group.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was, again, I guess that's become my favorite game of that year. And that is just such a great game.
You've seen the light.
Yeah, that one's so good.
It's so good.
Though, like, I do want to play this with people. Like, I find myself teaching this game a lot to people. Or, you know, just playing with people that aren't going to be looking for that full experience. And I find myself, even though I've played it a ton, like, I want to play with people, again, that, you know, that have played it. So we can just do the full, like, draft the cards and play through the whole, you know, the whole game, starting from, like, zeros of it, you know, like, just play through the whole thing.
You did not teach this at your game day.
A while ago. What do you mean?
What did you you said you taught a new group this?
Yeah, I taught the owner and his son, like, a couple of his sons.
Oh, that's a
of
great,
the store.
Oh,
yeah.
That's a great group of people to teach this game to.
No, they loved, so Steve's the owner.
Yeah, I think everybody can know that.
Portal. Yeah. So I taught it to, you know, him and, like, his two of his sons that were around.
That's awesome.
And we just played through, you know, like, with Venus next, so it was, like, a little bit more too. You know, it wasn't like, but we didn't do drafting. I hate teaching that as the first play. Because, like, the first thing you get dealt 10 cards, and then you're told, like, now make these huge decisions as far as what you want to be doing.
You don't initially draft.
You don't draft with the 10?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay. But either way, I guess, like, the 10 are tough to look through. So
sure.
You get 10
and
then do it. And then, like it's still really early to, like, be dealt 4 cards and say, draft these without really knowing what you're building toward yet.
Right, right.
Because even at that point, like, I know after playing a few times, like it took me a little while to, like, get a sense of what I needed to keep and what I needed to, like, what I needed wanted to keep to play and what I wanted to keep to get out of, like, the circulation, you know. And I think that's got such a huge thing to it. If you're not really as well versed in that, you're going to be passing stuff and one person's going to run away with it.
Yeah.
And it might not, like, I guess it's still, I still find it fun when that happens, but I could see others, like, just not enjoying it. Like, it's just like one run away, But either way, like Terraforming Mars is great. Steve ended up picking it up after, you know, I taught it to him,
nice.
Which I guess is kind of his tendency, but
yeah.
But either way, they had fun, and I want to play it with them again soon just so they can kind of keep it fresh and, you know, get it back to the table.
Nice. We played Gaia Project. There's not really anything I have to say about Gaia Project. It's my second favorite game of all time. I love it. I've played it. Who even knows how many times since I've got it. But it was cool to teach two new people and just continue to play new. I think I've actually played all of the races in Gaia Project now. Although that would mean I've played it 14 times, yes.
So now you're done?
I don't know. I mean, that counts solo play. So I guess, yeah, I feel like I've played them all. There's probably one that I didn't realize that, like, I was, like, if I was playing two-player with Kathy and I just was looking at her board, you know what I mean? I feel like I played them.
Yeah.
She probably beat me and I said, I don't know. But, we did that. I'm skipping up here. I talked about Byzance, which is so fun to say.
Yeah.
But you should give impressions on Heaven and Ale.
Heaven and Ale? Yeah. You already went through, like, the playthrough on it?
Yeah, because like, I played it a little... Well, did I talk about it? Yes, I talked
about it. Okay. No, I was looking forward to this one. This was one of those games that, you know, it took a little longer for us to get in after, you know, the, like, the Essen games had been released. But this one came out, you know, last year, right? So, but then we got it in, like, within the past month or so. Or the past couple months. Either way, it took a little while. It was one I was looking forward to for, you know, for quite some time. And I'm glad that, like, it finally got to the table. You know, we played a three-player game, and I think the, like, it's just such an easy, like, a quick teach in some ways, and you really have to play through to see what you're, what mm-hmm. you're doing. But it works really smoothly. Like, I think there are a lot of interesting decisions to be made, like yeah. with how you're gonna like try to play the game, like rush it or just like, you know, go step by step, very procedural, like, and even yeah. then it changes based on how like other people are trying to do it. Mm-hmm. Like if they're like really putting some emphasis somewhere else, you might have to like push it a little bit harder just to get stuff that you want,
right?
And I don't know, it felt really smooth and one that I could get to the table like that with, you know, with my wife and my brother-in-law and all that, you know, like it feels like one that's just easy to get out and play and it would be rewarding.
Yeah. I wasn't sure playing three, like four just feels like where this game is at to me. And like, they definitely changed the 2 and 3 player experience, but I'm not certain that they found the right formula.
Right.
For all that. And I haven't heard great things about 2, you know, and 3 seemed fine. I was very bitter on the, like, I could not step on the barrels. So I couldn't right. get, like, 14 points or something, whatever yeah. it was, 12 points off a barrel, whatever it would have been, because people stepped there. And I totally appreciate the, like, they stepped there first mm-hmm. thing. But it felt like maybe those spaces could just be unlimited people could step on. I don't know, something. It was weird in three-player that I had no option. I had to jump over, and then I had to jump over again. And, you know, play better, timing, whatever. But then I end up with, like, 10 points because I had no barrels. And you guys had, like, 12 and 14 points in barrel. You still beat me, so I wouldn't have,
right.
I wouldn't have been anywhere. So having 10 points and having 24 points and still being in last doesn't necessarily matter. But I still felt a little weird about it, like... There's just, unless I did it turns before when I wasn't maxed, mm-hmm. but it's weird you can step on it when your tableau is maxed and then somebody else can't. That was just a weird experience. But
I mean, Heaven and Ale looks like this, like, it looks very overly complex, right? Like, right. it looks like this huge, elaborate thing, mm-hmm. but it boils down to just, you know, placing a few things, and they do similar things based on where they're placed. Or, like, it's like, you know, the tiles go out, but they all kind of have very similar effects as far as what, you know, what, how they work.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like, what you're really trying to figure out is a good system to, like, turn this corner, like, of creating an engine to generate money and then turning that into points eventually. Or at least, right. that's at least how it felt like it yeah. was being played for our game. Maybe there's a way to, like, do it a different way, you know. Yeah.
Right, right.
I'm sure there's got to be something. But, like, you know, that's really, like, it felt like it was a cool thing to try to figure out. And, you know, balancing, like, all right, do I want to lock this in so I'll be able to do something later in the game? Or do I need to do it here now to get money so I can do all this, like, this other stuff? And I think those decisions were rewarding. So I really did enjoy Heaven and Ale.
Yeah, I think, you know, when I think of Euro games, probably engine building is one of people's favorite things. Worker placement, resource management. Those are probably, like, some of the favorite things that people have. But this game has what I think is a hidden gem of Euro games that people don't see, which is timing. And this game has timing in spades. Because it's the timing of me versus you, the interactive timing of, oh my gosh, you took that and I needed that right before me. Or, oh, I got there just in time before somebody else took it, or whatever it is. But then it also has the timing on your own board of the timing, when will you complete actions, and the timing of, when am I going to take those abilities to maximize them. So you've got, like, these three levels of timing that you're balancing.
Right.
Meanwhile, with this, you know, reasonably difficult and or complex system to score points. Like, you know, just within how that happens, that's complex. The game itself isn't complex, like you said. So it's like, I don't know. I just think this, of many games, this game just, you know, oozes that timing mechanic.
Yeah, but it's, I mean, it's also funny, like, I've played, I'm looking through this, so I'm going to jump around a little bit here.
Yep.
But, like, I've played a few that are just, like, those classic, they feel classic. You're like, you know, Stone Age, Trajan, Navigador. Like, we played Navigador just the other night. But, yep, like, all these kind of have that feel of, like, this classic Euro game where it's like, this is so good. There are all these really interesting decisions to be made. You know, and it doesn't really, like, they all just kind of hold up. And I feel like Heaven and Ale is right in there with these other games that, like, they have that feel of...
It definitely has that classic Euro feel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I guess, you know, all those ones are... Those, like, Stone Age, Trajan, and Navigador have been at the top of my, like, you know, my favorite... Like, they're not, like... I don't know where they rank specifically, but they're up there as games that I remember really enjoying. And then getting them back to the table makes me, you know, recognize how much I did enjoy them.
Mm-hmm.
I have a different perspective on gaming now for a lot of these, but they still, like, they still have that really tense feel that that gives you the reward.
Hansa Teutonica.
Though, the last play, I guess, that was just... That was skewed with, like, because Larry just kept running, like, he kept building these routes to get the, like, bonus tiles, right?
Oh.
And he'd, like, place a bonus tile out on the map that he was building. Right. No, I know.
Oh,
so we played it incorrectly.
Gotcha.
And now, like, it would definitely be good to go back to it.
Oh, I guess I've played it with other people then recently.
Oh, okay.
That I didn't play with you, so maybe I was thinking you were in those plays.
No, I wasn't. Gotcha. Probably. I think that was the most recent one. I don't know. I could be wrong.
Nice.
But they all, yeah, they all have that feel. And, like, that's a good thing. You know, that's a compliment for all those games. And I think because Heaven and Hell could be in that discussion for me, like, that's just a showcase of where it fits, at least at the moment, you know. Who knows how it will hold up long term, but I haven't played those other games enough to really see that either.
That's a great game to have at tabletop.
All those games would be.
But I'm just saying, because, yes, but, like, in that 2 p.m. to 8 p.m. hour where it's really busy, but you want to play a game with somebody, but you don't want to play a three-hour epic, plus that game plays better at 4, so that's a place where you're just going to get 4 people. That's a perfect game to have there, you know?
Yeah.
I think. All right, we had two other plays. I'm going to flip-flop them in terms of order. So we played The City of Kings,
yep,
which we basically played twice, because we played and realized we were going to fail and started over again and played again and won. And I had actually played it and failed a few nights earlier, or a week earlier or something, as well. So City of Kings, I believe the publisher is the City of Games, but I think this is their only one. Frank West is the designer. Okay. It's a big Kickstarter game. And there's been a series of these that have been very successful, you know, where the box just can't fit anymore and the price tag is high, but they've been you know, big. Gloomhaven, Seventh Continent, Kingdom Death Monster, bunch of these. And so City of Kings is like an action selection adventure game. And so the mode we played was like a story mode. There's a bunch of tiles out on the board, and we're working cooperatively. And I guess we don't really know our goal. We know there's like something to investigate in the story. We have to get to a certain tile. Right. And you can select these actions. So you have like four cylinders to select actions. Now, you have a hero, and you also have workers. So it has kind of a Euro-ness to it, to go collect these resources and bring them back to the city. You can move across these tiles, which are kind of laid out like memory cards, just in a grid. And when you move to an unexplored tile, you can then explore it as an action to flip it over. And there can be creatures or resources or quest cards basically on those tiles. Mm-hmm. The creatures that spawn are, their stat line is predetermined, and then they get random special abilities. The story here in the game is that there's like a necromancer who did all this chaotic magic on the land, and so you don't any longer have just like bears and wolves and orcs and goblins. You have these like mishmash characters with abilities, you know. So you've got a really strong goblin who casts magic or whatever. Like, it's supposed to be this kind of idea. So the game is having you progress to these plot points. There's group experience. So as the group levels, you all level, you have a load of cubes with abilities, attack and heal and health, and your workers have like a move stat and a how many dice they can roll to gather good stat. And so you can level those up, as well as like a little tech tree where you gain additional skills of your choice, and then like special abilities or powers, like I can now heal for 50% more, or I can cure poison, or I can ignore shields when I attack. So basically as a group, you're trying to progress through this. Probably one of the main barriers in the game to understand is that these creatures that spawn are strong. So it's not spawning rats and, you know, pesky little goblins that you can slay in a single swipe. So they really become barriers. Those creatures are something you have to work together as a group to take down. Mm-hmm. So we kind of set up, and we were playing with Jason Perez, and we had another person playing with us as well. And we set up, and we were kind of understanding the game, and we just pushed ourselves too far. Like, we were...
We
were exploring too much. And creatures were popping up. And then we were drawing quests, and more creatures were spawning. And the creatures don't just attack on their space. They attack, like, down the line. And they have, like, an attack everybody. And it just got crazy. We just couldn't complete the goals we were trying to do. So we started over. And we were much slower about how we were doing things, and much more direct about, okay, when that creature comes up, we're going to sacrifice all actions to take it down. And then we were going to get resources. What was interesting with the resources is that you roll dice to gather the resources, and there were distraction symbols? What were those?
Were they attention? Yeah, something like that.
So you could roll attention symbols, which is you don't get a resource and you put an attention. And once there's four attention, another creature will spawn. So unlike some games like even StarCraft or Warcraft on the computer, where like the resources eventually run out and the mine collapses, it was kind of having that mechanism, but even way more punishing. I mean, had that happened to us, we'd be in significant amount of trouble. So that part was strange. And when we were going much slower, we had gobs of resources.
Right.
We had tens of resources of things. But the resources basically buy armor. But we didn't have armor.
Yeah. And these barricades.
Right. So what was difficult in the game is it felt like there were all these pieces, but they weren't balanced. Like, you could have too much of one thing and not enough of this other piece. Or you could get too many enemies and not have the strength to kill them. Or you could have so much strength that when an enemy comes... I mean, that's what I end up being. I just ran up to an enemy with 40 health and in two turns decimated it. You know, it was just done. Like,
right.
I was so powerful by that point.
Right, the game is very swingy in what, you know, what experience you're going to have.
Yeah.
You know, and it just, that is tough. Like, I had fun with the group, but I didn't have fun with the game system.
Yeah.
Because of that, you know, and I understand, like, you know, like, the story element, was, like, what we were doing was
very,
in some ways, like, it was like, yeah, it was a very slow build, but we were wanting to, like, find more things within what we were doing, right? We wanted to kind of progress this thing along and see these new things that could come out and all that sort of stuff. And that part was cool in theory, but again, it was like, it was not allowing you to do that. It wasn't just saying, you know, do all that, explore and have fun and see what we're presenting to you. Mm-hmm. It was like, all right, well, we're going to start you off and you're not going to be able to, like, handle anything. So you need to, like, probably explore a little bit, and then
work as a team.
Now you need to, like, stop and work and build up, and then you can explore a little bit more.
Right.
And now the game's over, or at least that's kind of how it felt for us. But, you know, it was one where I wanted to like it going in, or like, I think this type of game is always difficult. You know, like these huge story driven games. I think about it, and I'm like wanting one sort of experience from the box, or I want one type of game to come out of it, and then it, like, nothing really can live up to those expectations that I have. Like, it needs to be perfect for that to happen. Sure. You know, and this one was not perfect by any means, but, like, but it was still enjoyable, like, with
we with were laughing we were pretty hard, and right. And when punishing things came up in that first game, like, it was funny. You know, it was fine, and we were reading, but, yeah, the game just doesn't know what it wants to be. Like, it put these Euro mechanisms in, but then roll dice, and the tension tokens, or whatever they were, like, it was like a 1 in 3 chance, which was just so extreme. So at some point, you had leveled up your characters, right? Your workers could gather, like, roll five dice worth of resources together.
But it was a huge negative.
Like, but, yeah, then you could just roll all those attention and suddenly just pull a creature that we couldn't kill.
And I had spent so long, like, leveling that up that I didn't have anything to, like,
and your hero,
combat.
Yeah.
You know, like, I was just, it was not, you know, it was tough. I know even that second game, like, we didn't have enough equipment, like, to to purchase.
Yeah.
And that's just, like, frustrating, because now the only way to get more is get this very rare thing in threes, like, in quantities of three.
Right.
Get this one item and, like, turn these in to, like, you know, expand upon what you're seeing. And I think, you know, like, I guess looking at this, like, I wonder, I was just thinking about it, like, I kind of expect something like a Lord of the Rings, the living card game, you know, like, I want something like that turned into a board game.
Yeah.
Where it does give you, like, these decisions to be made and, you know, ways that you have to, like, you know, you have to decide to, like, do specific things if you want to commit to one thing or another based on, like, what works best at the time. But this one was really just, you need to be really good and then you can do it.
I don't know why, but I couldn't help but think while we were playing that game about Spirit Island. Because I just, character progression is so exciting, and Spirit Island does character progression so well.
Yeah.
Like, it gives you these choices every round. Like, they're just built in, and I'm loving that built-in leveling up or built-in engine building that are in games. This is what makes me love Castell so much, that you just keep adding people to your group, so naturally you're just better.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, you just naturally you're getting better. The game just builds that in. You don't have to do anything to get better. And I love that in Spirit Island. So at the start of the round, you get to decide, do I want more discs to level up abilities or more cards or whatever? And City of Kings just, like, did the opposite of that. Like, it just completely cold halted you on leveling. And now you've got to go gather these resources or do these other things and make these die rolls and just who knows when. Or risk flipping a tile and having a creature pop up that you can't deal with. So now you're even more in the hole. Like, now you can't level. And then the creatures didn't even give you enough experience to level most of the time. So yeah, that wasn't even an option. Like, oh, we'll go kill some creatures. Like, you would, in a Final Fantasy game or an online game, you'd be like, well, I'm just going to spend today going and mowing down creatures to level up. You couldn't even do that. So it was like, it was just very limiting and just so much. It was just so overwrought with all these special abilities that were neat, but then you have to read everyone to figure out, to basically just avoid them was very much what you're trying to do because the creatures attack orthogonally, so we just stand on the diagonal tiles and they couldn't. So they were more like hazards than creatures. So unfortunately, that experience just was not positive.
Right. And I mean, these games are tough, like, because we only did one, you know, one scenario, but it's like,
there that's gold.
How do you hook someone with like one of these huge games nowadays?
Yeah.
Like, how do you get people to be like excited about it, but still say, you know, I'm going to commit to playing this game for, you know, however long it takes to find that enjoyment out of it.
Cool. Well, let's end with really one of the favorites that I've played in all these we're discussing. Hard to say when we talked about, you know, Gaia Project and stuff, but I really enjoyed Versin das Volk. So that is German for We Are the People. and so this is... I guess when I had heard about it, I had heard that it's kind of a Twilight Struggle style game.
Mm-hmm.
However, I noticed as soon as that got into your brain, you thought of the like, oh, I pick up and play a card, and then you get to use the card as well. And it doesn't have that mechanism in it. Like, well, if I use for it for
one
points, you
one
get
type
play.
Of card. What? They had the two numbers on them.
Yeah.
And the way you'd...
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Anyway, so this game is four decades of Germany post-World War II into the building of the Berlin Wall and then through to tearing down the Berlin Wall. Now, I played East Germany, you played West Germany. So, of course, West Germany is really controlled at this point by France, Britain, and America.
Mm-hmm.
And includes West Berlin, which is an interesting piece, you know, which is in the East German side, which is Soviet controlled. Yeah. And as well as East Berlin. And it's really, I guess, it's not an economic game, but you're focused on your economy. The game, like, there's no war here. It's not even really Cold War. Those events are surrounding you with the cards. But it's really an economic game. Can you get your economic engine running and go after the person? Because there's a pandemic-esque mechanism, which is unrest cubes. And if you get a fourth unrest cube, the people start protesting. And if you spell out Versin das Volk, you lose. And yours was... whatever yours was, I can't remember. So there's that piece. And so what I thought was clever. There's two clever pieces. So first off, it has cards for each decade. So you've got a set of 20 cards, and there's one card that is an East German card only. So it's got a pretty major event on it. In the second decade, you can build the wall. And in the fourth decade, you can tear down the wall. So then you deal out these cards. So each player gets two, and then you put a row of seven cards out. And then on your turn, you can play a card from your hand, or you can play one from the center row. When all the ones from the center row are gone, you deal out seven more. That will leave two cards that don't come into the game at all, so change it up a little bit. And when those seven cards are gone, that ends the decade, and then there's a whole series of events that happen. So that part's really clever in like the tableau, and you're picking what you want to play. It's definitely the beginning is take that. Like, I've got to get rid of your powerful cards. For the most part. Yeah. I lost, so I guess I can't say what's the best choice.
Well, I mean, we played... It's the first game. You don't know, is this better for me than this is worse? Or, you know, is this better for me than... How do you compare those two, right?
Yeah. And then the other mechanism that I absolutely love is this living standard. And so what you have to do, without getting into too much details, you have to build factories or production in all the provinces. And once they reach certain thresholds, you can put these living standards down. And when you put a living standard, you're like increasing the quality of living because, you know, there's production and things happening and, you know, the GDP of that region is going up and whatnot. and you can remove unrest cubes. And then the living standards almost become like a little war, because if within your own set of provinces, if there's an imbalance, people will gain unrest. And then between neighboring West and East German provinces, there's a war of unrest cubes. And that was just great, because it's like the game within the game. And so that was really neat in terms of playing all that out. We should mention, so basically I have to hold out for 4 decades as East Germany, and if I hold out, I win. And you have to make my economy crumble and my unrest happen and all those kind of things. I also had another victory condition. There are socialists, and I believe I have 12 socialist cubes. I start with 2 out on the board, and I can generate more. If I get all of mine out on the board, which they can help me remove unrest cubes, so I have a little bit of an advantage in that sense. If I get them all out, I win. If you force me to remove them all from the board, then you win. So there's that piece as well, which is interesting. All right, I talked a lot about the game, so you talk about your impressions.
It was really neat. Like, the two-player aspect of it was...
And it's only
very back and forth. Yeah, sorry. I mean, like, it's a two-player game that has a lot to it. You know, like, there are definitely some games out there as two-player games where you just kind of, you know, back and forth, and it's kind of pre-scripted. But this one has a lot of depth a small box, you know? Yeah. And there's, like, there again, it's just that cool... How like you have to evaluate cards at every point in the game just to try to figure out, you know, like, I guess so many things go into those decisions. Like, can I risk like leaving that out there? Can I play a card from my hand because it's better for me now to do something later? Do I want to play a card to like end the round? Like, do I want to take one of those cards and just force the end of the round, or can I wait? Can I delay? And I think those things just like that builds into this incredible, like, you know, tense two-player game.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's definitely one that, you know, it does have that replay value. Like, you know, you can just, you know, just sides. With the cards. Yeah. You can change it up, and it is a different game every time. So even though you're doing similar things, there's so much more that goes into what you're, like, how you're building up your engine and what you can use for that.
It was interesting. Like, you definitely had the advantage over me going into the third decade. Mm-hmm. I was doing well the first 2 decades. The third one, you took advantage. I had a bad play, I remember, in there that I was like, ooh, I shouldn't have done that. But then it was interesting how... the 4th decade, the cards were just so favored towards West Germany, which makes sense. It's your last push, and thematically it makes sense, because the wall did come down, and communism did leave.
There was a wall.
Germany. There was a wall, yes.
Not in our game.
So it makes sense thematically, but it was just like, it got overwhelming. It was like, okay, let me see how I can kind of keep myself in this, and I got to stop that. One thing, now I gotta stop those 2, now 4, like, it was just over.
Yeah, it was strange, because it felt like I had multiple ways that I was gonna win. It was just a matter of, like, playing out and seeing which one happened first.
Yeah.
By that point.
Yeah.
Which, you know, didn't leave it with the best taste, but I think there was enough that, like, that led up to that. You know, where we had to kind of see what that turned into,
right,
to know how to, like, to prep for that.
But it felt like a normal win. Like, it didn't come as a shock. It was a little shock of, like, oh, I don't have any cards to stop this thing that's just gonna happen. Like, I couldn't get those. Right. But it wasn't like going all the way back now, Fog of War, where it was like, oh, I didn't even see that coming. I definitely prepared for this, and I was like, I need to get rid of these cards. And it was just a little shocking that that there were just no cards to help me, you know, in terms of what was happening. But I really enjoyed the game. I mean, the decision. I mean, this is not compared to a Patchwork or a Seven Wonders duel. I mean, this is solid 2 hours of back and forth. And that, like, that two-player back and forth is what makes it so good, right? It just wouldn't be nearly as exciting at 4, you know?
Yeah, it did feel... I wonder if, like... when you're shuffling, like, when you're dealing out those cards, like, it feels like it can be very, very much leaning into one player's favor. It's just the way stuff happens.
Yeah, you could hold the right card.
Or, you know, like, and I remember even playing through, like, it felt like there were a couple times, I guess the main one, when you added, like, all those those factories, like,
yeah,
in Russia, like, there were all these ones that kind of came out, and, like something like that felt like a huge card to happen. Maybe it's just because there was a lot more evidence of what did result from that card that was played. You know, it felt like it was a pretty big swing in your favor for one, from one aspect. But then the ways that, like, I guess, like, at the end of it, it hadn't swung in enough or anything to, like, right, to change the outcome. But, you know, even if, like, it felt like if something like that was removed, then it would have even been more difficult. But maybe that was just because we played the way we did, which led to the result that we had.
Right.
You know.
We very much, too, we were both building up our economy. And I think you need to build up your economy in the game. But there were early cards that I know that I ignored that were like, add two unrest to your side. And I didn't play those cards. Where I could have just started, like, really slowing your engine down. You would have then done the same to me. So we would have been focusing on the other player's side as opposed to our own.
Right, you had played it by yourself, too. Like, you had played it, and it felt like it was kind of like, that's kind of how
very different. I did a lot of unrest to West Germany, so they were very slowed down in their ability to
grow. East Germany end up winning that one? Do you know?
They did. They held out to the end, yeah.
So, I mean,
yeah, because they slowed down a region, so it's like now they got to focus on getting that under control. And East Germany has actually better unrest control than West Germany does. East Germany has the socialists, it has cards that remove multiple.
The police.
The police that's built in there, so there's a lot of mechanisms for them to remove unrest, but West Germany doesn't have as much. They really need to rely on cards or just using actions to get rid of them. So.
Right. And then it was like, element. I guess even some of the things that I was able to do, you know, just with like, with all the stuff that I could remove from your, like I could tear down some of your structures and stuff like that before you got to like really utilize them. And it felt like there were a few moments where it was just really like, this completely hinders what you're trying to do. Yeah. And then it swings it like way more because it's like one or two things that were really key that all of a sudden you can no longer rely on.
And that piece though, what was so cool to me was like, that was punishing, but that was so thematic.
Right.
To what was happening in East Germany. Like, mm-hmm. right, with all this communism trying to survive and all these things and trying to be independent on their own, but just without having those connections, they needed to constantly force outside connections, and thus things would deteriorate because they had to refuse out of political reasons, but then suffer for economic reasons. So, that was neat. But, yeah, I really, really, really enjoyed Versailles. So, I'm excited to play it. I know there was an expansion that came out at Essen. So, we'll have to try to
see how
we would get that. But, there's that. Woo! That's it. That's a lot of games. We just talked about a lot for a long time. So, I think that's it. I think one last plug for Tabletop Day. Oh, did you have... No, we're good. We're going to be done. So there's more to come.
Yeah.
One last plug for Tabletop Day. Be there. Other things people should know.
April 28th, come down. Play some games. Bring some stuff if you want to play. Like, but we'll have a ton of stuff there.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we'll be trying to get like a lot of like the bigger games or, you know, some good group games going on.
Too. Play Get the MacGuffin with me. I've got my copy.
Yeah.
Play it with me. I want to play with everybody I can, so that'll be that. So, yeah, if your car's not warming up, then warm it up now and be ready to get this. You know, I get this out on Friday.
Oh, yeah, that's
Thursday. True. So, makes sense. Cool. Well, I think that's it. This is episode 85 of the Portal Gaming Podcast. Your ship. I want her from you fair and square. I am your host, The Brand.
And I am your co-host, Brian.
And we hope you step into the portal. Portal Game Podcast is a product of Time Machine Toy and Hobby Store / The Portal, which is located at 71 and 60 Hilliard Street, Manchester, Connecticut. This episode was recorded on April 20th, 2018. Please send any questions to us at portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com. Total Gaming Podcast is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, and for more awesome podcasts, visit www.dicetowernetwork.com. Hey, thanks for listening to us.